Open your Bibles to Galatians chapter 2, and we'll be there shortly. Thank you, David. I love that song. I've been crucified with Christ, and I love it for many reasons, but one particular reason is the irony of the tempo and feel of the song with what we're saying. Think about it. Think about it. I've been crucified with Christ. I died. Yes! Is that not, I mean, especially for people who are not Christian or those who have not read the book of Galatians or the book of Romans or don't fully understand the gospel, when you hear that song, it's got to be a little off-putting. You're like, I have just, you know, you may feel like you've just entered into a cult or something, and you know, all these people are so excited about their death, and yet we are. And I think the tempo to that song is right, and the style to that song is correct. And though it may sound weird, we're going to dive into that a little bit more and hopefully uncover why that is. But think about that for a second. While it is something worth celebrating, before it's worth celebrating, it's worth understanding. And when you understand it, it's a tough passage. And before you get to the point where you can sing that song that we just sang about this scripture, there's some tough things that you have to understand about this passage before you can celebrate it like we just did. Does that make sense? So he says, I have been crucified with Christ. It makes me think about the mom that was trying to get her kids to understand. I told you I've been really thinking about this mission statement this morning as I've been sitting there and just reading this through and through and seeing, man, it just relates so well with what we're talking about. I'm seeing this in a new way, you know, that the Leander Church seeks to be a people shaped into the image of Jesus Christ. We want to look like him. We want to be him, right? I mean, so that when others look at us, they don't see Nathan, they see Jesus. That's the goal, is that they see him. And so a mom was trying to get her kids to understand that exact thing I once heard. And her kids, Kevin and Ryan, were their names. One's 3 and 1's 5, so younger boys. And they were arguing about which one of them was going to get the first pancake off the griddle that their mom was cooking. And so they get into this argument, I'm getting the first one. No, I'm getting the first one. And it's just back and forth. And so this mom saw the teaching moment to teach their kids to look like Jesus. And she says, well, if Jesus were sitting right here, boys, he would say, let my brother have the first pancake. I'll wait. And so Kevin immediately turns to Ryan and says, well, that's great. You play Jesus. I've been crucified with Christ. What does that mean? What does that look like? Well, firstly, I think it means that my nature has been changed. My identity has been changed. Like I said, so that when others look at me, they see Jesus, not myself. More importantly, what it means is that when God looks at me on Judgment Day, he doesn't see me, he sees Jesus and judges accordingly. It means my nature has been changed. It means my sin has been subdued. It means that my old way of living or my old nature has been conquered. I've been crucified with Christ. But here's the thing that we have to understand as we seek to look like Jesus. We have to understand Jesus went to a cross. And Jesus looked battered and broken and beaten. And so for us to look like Jesus means that we have to be crucified with him. And here's the thing. Paul's crucifixion in this text in Galatians chapter 2, as he says, I have been crucified with Christ so that I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. He's not saying that we need to look like Jesus looked as he faced his physical cross. Physically crucified on a material cross, right? That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about an inward crucifixion that must take place in the life of a believer. And so that is what he's saying when he says, I have been crucified with Christ. My inward self, my old nature, who I was, has died. And who I am now is a totally new creation. And I love that imagery. Paul expounds and pictures this more in Romans chapter 6. As he talks about salvation, and he talks about baptism. And he gives this beautiful picture of what it's all about. Right? Like, there's this concept, by the way, that happens with baptism a lot, where people go, well, why do I need to be baptized? You know? And if you're asking that question, I don't think you fully understand what it's about. Right? Because if you fully understood the picture of baptism, it is something that is beautiful. It is amazing. It should be the highlight of your spiritual walk with Christ. The moment that you said, my inward self will be crucified with Christ and my old self will be buried with him through baptism. And when I come up out of that water, I may look the same, I may sound the same, but I am not the same. The old self has perished. And the new self has risen just as Christ was risen from the grave. I mean, it's the same thing as say, you know, why have a marriage ceremony? Why have wedding rings? Why have that exchange? No. It's a beautiful thing that you get to participate in. Why would you not want to be involved in this ceremony, this beautiful rich? And so as people say, well, why should I be baptized? I hate that question, because I think it's a misunderstanding of what it's all about, right? And so in that moment, what we're saying is, I've died and I've risen anew. It is saying I am crucified inwardly with Christ. And so what does this inward crucifixion look like? Well, I think we have to understand something. I'm going to present something you've probably never heard before. I've never actually heard it before until I started doing my study through this, and I labeled it myself. So if you don't agree with it, that's okay. Here's what I think. Jesus was crucified twice. I think he was crucified twice. The outward crucifixion is the one that we see at the cross, but the inward crucifixion took place in the garden. The inward killing of himself happened in the garden. The inward sacrifice of himself happened in the garden. And the physical crucifixion took place after the inward crucifixion had already occurred. The physical crucifixion only happened because the inward crucifixion had already occurred. I want you to look at that with me in Matthew chapter 26. This is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, passage in Scripture. It presents a beautiful side to Jesus. It also presents a very human side to Jesus. A lot of people try to say, well, Jesus lived perfect and was sinless because he cheated, because he was God. You ever heard that before? God could do that because he was God. No. God just did what we're capable of. I don't like, because it takes the pressure off of us. Well, it's not possible for us to live holy. Yes, it is. It's absolutely possible. And it's our expectation. And it's the way that we were designed. We are not designed to be sinners. When we sin, we're going against our nature. And so it's very possible for us to live that way. And yet we know the truth that not one of us have or will, and if we say we have, we're deceiving ourselves and the truth isn't in us. But Jesus didn't cheat in his faith and his journey on earth. No, he fully experienced it. And so in this garden scene, you see the battle that Jesus faced. It wasn't a cakewalk for him because he was, you know, God and man in one. No. It didn't eliminate the struggle that he faced, which is the same that we face. And in the garden, we see that struggle clearly. Look at it with me. We're going to read this together. Matthew 26, verse 36 says, then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, sit here while I go over there and pray. And he took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. And he said to them, listen to this humanness, the battle and the struggle within Jesus. He says, my soul is overwhelmed to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. And going a little farther, he fell down with his face to the ground, and he prayed, "My Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet, not as I will, but as you will." And so then he returned to his disciples, and they're doing what? They're asleep. It's been a long night. And he said, "Could you not keep watch with me for 1 hour, he asked Peter, "and watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." And so he went away a second time and he prays, "Father, if it's possible for this cup to be taken away, let it happen unless I drink of it, but may your will be done." And when he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. And so he left them and went away once more, praying a third time, and he said the same thing. And then he returned and he found his disciples sleeping again. And he said, "Are you still sleeping and you're still resting? Look, the hour is near and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners." Now listen to this. Listen, here's the key. It's the last section. Don't read over this quickly. Understand. He says, after this horrible debate, "Rise, let's go. Because here's my betrayer." And where does he go? To meet the betrayer. He doesn't run away. He runs to his crucifixion. He embraces his physical crucifixion because of a night-long inward crucifixion that had just taken place. There was still shedding of blood, just like there is in a crucifixion as well, wasn't there? As he prays so intently that his sweat turns to blood. Oh, there was bloodshed through this inward crucifixion. It's a perfect example, this garden experience, of what it looks like for us. So when Paul says, "I've been crucified with Christ, so that it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me," it's a beautiful metaphor in which all Christians are called now to die, to be crucified with him through this inward crucifixion that took place. Jesus was crucified once for all, but that's his physical crucifixion. But this inward crucifixion we all take place in. And so, by looking at his crucifixion in the garden of his inward self, I think we'll be able to see more clearly what Paul is referring to as he preaches to these Galatians, and he's telling them, as they're confused with this old law and they're not understanding grace in its entirety, and they're struggling with also abusing the grace that Christ has given them to do what they want as a license for immorality. And he says, no. We must be crucified with Christ. What does that mean? What does that look like? Well, let's look at Christ's crucifixion in the garden. Number one, I have to crucify my mind. To crucify my mind. That's what this looks like. Jesus says, "Take this cup from me. God, please. I don't want to go to the cross." You ever caught that? Jesus is saying, "Please. God, please." Three times it says. I think he prayed it more than three. It was a night-long prayer. We just get little snippets. It's the highlights. We're getting the subject matter of what was really prayed. There was a lot more words that Jesus said that aren't recorded because it was a night-long prayer. But the subject of the prayer was, "God, I don't want to do this. It's going to hurt. If there's another way, can we find a plan B?" That's Jesus' prayer, folks. But that's not all the subject matter. Because he says, "Not my will, but yours be done." I have to crucify my mind. Jesus was willing to sacrifice his agenda for the will of God. Are we willing to do the same? Because that's what it means. So as we read this in Galatians 2 and verse 20, to be crucified with Christ, every week when you walk in here and you see what it means to be shaped into the image of Jesus, it's not meaning that you're just going to have his miraculous power and have all the wonderful things that happened in his ministry. You can't just pick the great things that happened to Jesus. You have to go through the tough things that Jesus went through too. And Jesus was crucified. And therefore, when we look like him, we must be crucified as well. And so we have to crucify our mind. And he never allowed his agenda to get in the way. Think about it for a second. some of Jesus' best ministry happened through interruptions. Did you ever notice that? When Jesus was interrupted, he did his best work. I just thought some on my own. It took me just 2 minutes to think of some of these examples, because there's so many, right? The interruption of blind Bartimaeus, who's sitting on the roadside, and Jesus was passing by, and blind Bartimaeus knew that this was my only chance, and so he calls out, and he says, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me," as Jesus is passing by, this blind man calling out, you know, "Have mercy on me, a sinner." And all the people around him saw what Jesus was doing, and because, right, like, crowds follow Jesus. When Jesus goes walking by, like, crowds are gathering. And so these whole crowds are passing by, and they look to this blind man, and they say, "Stop it. He doesn't have time for someone like you." And I love the passage, because this man knew, this is my only hope, and so he calls even louder. It says he called all the more. And he says, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And the text says Jesus stopped and turned and looked at him. And he makes eye contact with a man who can't see. And he says, "You, the ones who had just told him to be quiet, call him and bring him to me." And he heals this man in front of all those people as he was interrupted on his journey. The woman who was bleeding for 12 years, and they're in the middle of this crowd, and Jesus is just touched by this woman on the hem of his garment. And he says, "Power came out from me." And Peter's like, "Well, there's a bunch of people that are bumping into you, Jesus. You know, it's okay. I'm sorry you're being interrupted here, you know, but let's keep going." He says, No. "I need to find this woman." And he healed this woman, and he forgave this woman. And it's a beautiful, beautiful story that takes place in the midst of this interruption of Jesus feeding 5,000 people that he wasn't supposed to feed. The disciples said, "We ain't got no food. We got to send them off. We can't feed these people." He said, No, we can." They interrupted his lunch. Interrupted a boy's lunch too, by the way. And he feeds the 5,000. I love this one. This was my favorite image of Jesus being interrupted, is when these kids are coming to Jesus. And the text says that the disciples were indignant when they saw that the parents had allowed their kids to come in and interrupt Jesus as he's sitting and he's teaching. And Jesus rebuked the disciples, and he said, No, let them come to me. And can't you see Jesus? I mean, he's teaching. He's got things to do. And these kiddos just come running into his arms, and he's holding them, and he's falling over, and he's laughing with them. I mean, Jesus loved these kids, and he loved their interruption of him. I struggle with that sometimes as I'm talking to an adult, and a kid comes up and pulls on my pant leg. You know, and it's so easy to say, "Well, the adults are talking right now," right? And lately, I've tried so hard to say, "You know what, it's okay," and get down on that kid's level and look at them in the eyes and give them the 30 seconds that they want of my time. And speak life and speak truth in order, because I think that's what Jesus did. He loved the interruption. Why? Because he had crucified his mind. We're really good at having plans, aren't we? Planning out our schedule, our routines, what our life should look like, what our kids' life should look like. We have our plans. And when I get interrupted and I've got things going on, "I'm sorry, I can't deal with that. I'm busy right now." Yet God loves to interrupt. And he's really good at interrupting. And if you won't crucify your mind and you don't crucify your agendas, it's going to be really hard for you to deal with his interruption. But Jesus, he says, "I don't want this. There's got to be another plan. Let there be another way. This isn't how I want to draw it up, God. But not my will, but yours be done." And he crucified his mind. And so from the beginning to the end, Jesus shows us that he's crucified his mind to the Father, and he was willing to give up his time and his plans and his agenda to the Lord. So we're crucified with Christ. We crucify our mind inwardly, but we also crucify our hearts, folks. And this is a step deeper. While the two are related, they're not exactly the same. Crucifying my mind and my thoughts and my plans and my agendas is one thing, but crucifying my desires is another. Crucifying the things that I want. And Jesus says with such emotion in the garden scene, he says, My soul is overwhelmed to the point of death. I don't think he's exaggerating, folks. I mean, this crucifixion in the garden almost took his life because of the battle of the inward struggle. Matthew 26, 38, my soul is overwhelmed to the point of death. And here's the difficult part, is you've got to crucify your heart. And it's hard because death is painful. Living for Christ and dying for Christ, listen to me, it will overwhelm you at some points. I would love to be able to tell you, you just come and you get baptized into Christ, you dedicate your life to him, and it's going to be so good. It's going to be so easy. I've told you about the guy that I my first Bible study ever with, that atheist science teacher who worked at a gas station. Remember that, some of you? And I'm talking with him and studying with him. And he says, this is all great, and I know I need to be baptized for my sins, but when are we going to get to the money part? I said, what? I didn't say it like that, but I did think that. I'm like, what are you talking about? I've never heard this. He says, no, I know somewhere in here that following Christ will give you money, and I need it because I don't have any. And he was really struggling financially, and he was saying, I know that when you're a Christian, and I think it's because he would see all these preaching students come across the street, and they were dressed up, and they would walk in, and they look like they've got their life together, and so I don't know if that's where it came. I'm not sure where he got this idea that following Christ will give you money, but this prosperity gospel is just not true. We have to be crucified with Christ. That's what it means to look like him, crucified with him. We must die in our mind and in our heart. And that means that our emotions belong to the Lord. That means that our feelings belong to the Lord. That means my heart as a whole belongs to him. But when you crucify your heart to God, listen to me, what once overwhelms you will eventually become your joy. Let me say that one more time. What overwhelms you will eventually become your joy. And that happens with Jesus as we look into Hebrews. And in the garden, in the moment of the crucifixion, he says, my soul is overwhelmed to the point of death. But then in Hebrews, it says, he who for the joy set before him endured the cross. What? The thing that overwhelmed him eventually gave him his joy. And that's what happens when you're crucified inwardly. His outward crucifixion, the not getting what he wants, not living in the life that he wants, and being hurt and going through pain became his joy. Listen, let me give you an example of what this looks like for us. Years and years ago, I was engaged to a woman, and she broke up with me and left me for another guy, and I was in Sunset School of Preaching. I've told you about this. And there was just a time in my life that was very dark, and I hurt in a way I had never experienced before, right? There was just a level of pain that came with that never had before. So much so that I almost left my school and went back home, and I wouldn't be standing here right now. I mean, it's a pivotal moment for my story. And the fact that my family drove 11 hours all through the night and showed up at my doorstep at 6 in the morning to encourage me and to help me through was a beautiful moment. I mean, it's a wonderful story for my family. But what once overwhelmed me is now my joy. I love talking about how we made it through that horrible situation at the time. And I go, I would not live the life I've lived, and I would not be who I am if it was not for what once overwhelmed me has now become my joy. When you're able to crucify your heart, and my parents helped me to do that. Because guess what? Inward crucifixion is not a one-time action like physical crucifixion. Inward crucifixion is a learned thing. It's a growth process. You're crucified daily, over and over again. Jesus was crucified once for all for your sins. This is not a saving of ourselves. Galatians makes that very clear. And yet he's trying to get them to understand, while, yes, you're not working for your salvation, there's things you have to do in being a Christian, and one of those is crucifixion. The other one is my mom and her alcoholism. How many times you heard me tell this story? How many times you heard me reference this? Why? Because that is my story in which my entire family was overwhelmed and now has become my joy to share. I love to talk about it. It's my favorite subject. How? Because what once overwhelmed me became my joy, because my mother learned at that time to finally crucify her heart and to crucify her mind in a way she had never before. And when she did, what once overwhelmed becomes your joy. And the same thing happened with Jesus. He said, I don't want to go. And when he says, let this cup pass from me, he's experiencing what I'm calling his inner crucifixion, but he's talking about his crucifixion, the physical crucifixion. And so when he says the joy set before him, he endured the physical crucifixion. But it took the garden moment to get there. But he finally got there, and we know that because he says, arise and let us go. And he didn't run away from it. He ran to it. Crucify my heart. Am I willing to be overwhelmed for Christ? Am I willing to be broke for Christ? Am I willing to be hurt for Christ? Am I willing to see those I love hurt for Christ? Because I got to crucify my heart. And following Jesus isn't always easy. And the last thing is this. This inward crucifixion is also a crucifixion of our hands and our feet. Matthew 26 and verse 46, Jesus says, rise and let us go. He didn't just stay on his knees and pray. He got up on his feet and he walked to the cross. And he carried his cross there until he couldn't anymore. It wasn't just his heart and his mind that he gave to the Lord. He gave his hands and his feet. He's willing to work. He's willing to do. Think about Jesus always crucifying his hands and his feet. I mean, I can't help but picture Jesus on his knees washing his disciples' feet. I mean, he's constantly going places and working with people who others wouldn't want to work with. He's eating with tax collectors and sinners. He's touching lepers to heal them. I mean, Jesus crucified his hands and his feet, both through the inward crucifixion of it and the metaphor I'm using, as well as the literal crucifixion, as the holes are still in his hands and his feet in his side. When we crucify, folks, our inward self to the Lord, when we say we want to be a people shaped into his image, this is not an easy mission statement. If this isn't costing you something in your life, then you probably aren't doing it right. Because this hurts. Because Jesus hurt. But when we do it, here's the key. Why? After this message, when you hear the truth of what it means to be crucified with Christ, then David, why are you singing a song that says, I've been crucified with Christ? Why are we so excited about it? It sounds awful. It hurts. And it gets real when you're living in the moment of the overwhelmed state, where for 8 years you're dealing with your mom's alcoholism, or a fiance leaves you and you're heartbroken, when you're dealing with the heartbreak. It's not something I'm running around singing in my living room. Well, that just happened, but hey, I've been crucified with Christ. I'm not ready for that because it hurts. So why can we sing that way? It's because when we finally are crucified through our inward crucifixion, when we give him our mind, when we give him our heart, and when we give him our hands and our feet, we see crucifixion in an entirely new way, a way we've never experienced or seen it before. And what once was overwhelming you, what once is something that was shameful, when Jesus steps into the picture of crucifixion, it turns it into jewelry for us to wear. It comes on our bracelet for us to experience. It becomes the focus of our mission statement, because when Jesus takes something that overwhelmed the world, that frustrated the world, that the world couldn't, he turned it into something beautiful. And that's what happens when we finally are crucified with him as well. Let me give you an example. This is a true story of a man and a woman, his wife, that were caught out in a hailstorm. And it starts, and it's not as bad, and they're trying to get to shelter, but it just escalates quickly. And it quickly, the hail grew to over baseball-sized hail, and they're out in the middle of it, and they can't make it to shelter in time. And so he quickly drapes himself over his wife because he realized if he didn't do something, his wife was going to be severely injured. And so this guy drapes himself over his wife and covers her with his own body so that instead of the storm hitting his wife, it starts to hit him. And these hailstones continued to grow as he bent over his wife, protecting her. So after a couple of minutes, the wife, recalling this story, says his ears started to bleed. And that some spots on his head started to form, these bruises. And the man tried to lead his wife to safety as he's hovered over her, but the stones were coming out faster and harder. And finally, the pounding stones took their toll. Weakened by the onslaught, the man finally collapsed unconscious over his wife to shield her from the danger. And after the storm was finally over, the man was left with scars from where the hail had battered away at him. And so after the storm, a local news report comes out, newscast came and interviewed, and the man's wife was asked about how she felt about this experience. And listen to this. She says, "Every time I look at that scar on his head and on his neck and on his ear, I love him even more. I love him more because I know he sacrificed himself for me." And what a beautiful picture of love, right? What an even more beautiful picture of what Jesus has done for us, right? I mean, it's a horrible sounding story, but when you hear it, it's a story of victory. It's a story that creates more love. It's a story that creates more joy. It's a crucifixion. It's a beating that took place that we can celebrate because of the victory through the sinlessness of the one who hung there. And when we're inwardly crucified with Christ, it's something we can celebrate because we know that we are writing our story of faith. And we know that the crucifixion and the difficult things that we're going through, it's not easy to crucify my mind. It's sure not easy to crucify my heart. And it's not easy to crucify my hands and feet. It'd be a lot easier if I could just come into church and just sit in church and just listen to sermons and not do anything. But because he says to go out into the world and live my gospel in front of other people and so that they can be baptized and enter the kingdom of heaven, because he gives me a role in his kingdom, because he's given me spiritual giftedness that I am able to do something that some others are not, and you're able to do many other things that I'm not able to do. He's given us a role. It's hard to crucify. Crucifixion hurts. But because of the one who was crucified physically for us, as we are crucified inwardly for him, because that's the only way we can pay him back, and it's not worth it, right? It's not an equal trade. But because of the redemption which he's given us, I will then crucify myself for him. And it is a beautiful, beautiful story. And that's what takes place as you give your life to Christ through the waters of baptism. That's what's happening. This picture of a beautiful, beautiful story. And so listen, I don't know where you are. And if you've been going through the motions, this is the invitation for you. Okay? If you've been stuck just checking a box and you haven't been living and you're saying, I'm trying to be shaped into the image of Jesus, but it's not really costing me anything, this is the invitation for you. And if you don't want to come respond physically in the front, that's okay. But it's time for you to make a change in your heart and your mind right now to say, I'm going to be crucified with Christ today. So that it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And when you fully get it, even though it hurts in the moment, you're going to find that there's some joy in it. And that's why we sing that song the way we do, folks. It's because it's something we get to look forward to. I get to be crucified today. And the longer you do it, the more your view changes towards it. But it takes time to get there because it's not easy. And so if you've been going through the motions, this is for you. Or if you've never been crucified with him through the waters of baptism, then you have a chance to do that this morning. And it is the most precious moment of your faith journey. And I would be honored to share that with you. And so if you're struggling or if you're ready to be baptized this morning, then you can come down to the front row and I'll talk with you and we'll get you in the water this morning. Whatever you need, think about it. If you need to respond, won't you come while together we stand and sing?